Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Weekender here on Planet FM. And we're kicking the promo music out early, and because we've got a lot to get through to today. So, a big shout out to Father Ted's Original Irish Pub. They're based at 1 Wellesley Street West in the Auckland CBD. They have a selection of local craft and international draft beers on taps, a selection of bottled beers, fine wines, good spirits, great food, and music Wednesday through to Sunday. So make Father Ted's your location to go to. Their number is 09377 3142, or you can email them fatherteds@hotmail.com. Well, Super Rugby starts next week, and we have just a panel at the beginning just to give our thoughts on what's going to happen this year. On line two, he is a renowned rugby commentator and knows a lot about rugby. We know him as Mr. Talkie, but he's a great bloke. Stephen Harris, good morning.
Yeah, good morning once again, Eamon, and always a privilege and a pleasure, never a chore to be on your show, and belated Happy New Year to all your listeners out there.
Absolutely. And on line one, well, he's back. So during this rugby season, you'll probably hear a lot of character assassinations about yours truly behind the mic, especially when it comes to my height and my weight. And we're even going to talk a bit of rugby. Former All Black AJ Whitten, good morning to you, AJ.
Hey,
and welcome back.
Yeah, Happy New Year, and Happy New Year to you too, Steve. And Peggy, good to catch up. We haven't done it for a while, and great to see you. And I did see you. And apologies for not taking you home in the car, but I didn't have my kiddie seat, so I couldn't put you in the bed. So my apologies for that, and I owe you another bed.
It starts. We're only 30 seconds into the season, and it starts. Hey, it's good to be back. It's great to have both of you on. I know that, Stephen, you're going to be doing a lot around the club scene and the Super Rugby. Picky AJ, you're always going to be opening the bat in here. So we look at Super Rugby pre-season over, and to me, you know, obviously now we get down to the crunch. When I look at the Super Rugby teams, you know, it is a season where everyone's backing the Hurricanes. There's still hope in the Blues, Crusaders. You can never ever rate them off. But out of all the New Zealand franchises, who to you, AJ, looks the most impressive?
I couldn't answer for you. I mean, I've seen a few of the pre-season matches. It's all pretty topsy-turvy. Someone's beat someone. The Hurricanes have won, I think, a couple. Highlanders lose 1 week, win next week. The Blues win or lose, beat the Crusaders. And a lot of players, I guess, who are in the All Black international scene have had their time out and are just slowly weaning their way into the season. So, look, I think we've had a nice little break. It's come upon us in a bit of a rush. And now it all starts next week where they're thrown into the deep end. And that's where I guess we'll see those who've done the hard yards and have grouped accordingly, and they're going to come out on top. But look, it's a big question mark. First two rounds, that's when we start to see where the winning teams possibly are going to come from. So, yeah, early days, everyone's got a chance from the kickoff. So, look, yeah. Obviously, I'm probably looking at the Crusaders to see where they are in the Chiefs, the payback time in the Blues. But hey, what do I know this early in the season?
Oh, AJ, you know a lot. You know a lot of rubbish too, because you talk to me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen, your thoughts on who really is looking impressive? Because you were out at Oniwa yesterday. Domain.
Well, firstly, good to hear your voice as well, AJ, mate, and I hope you had a good year. Christmas and New Year with the family. Yeah, unbelievable that it's rolled around so quickly. And of course, yesterday, speaking of pre-season games, I've been fortunate enough to see both the Blues two pre-season games, and certainly different. I know last week they played the Hurricanes and they pretty much rolled out an understrength side. Yesterday, a little bit different. They rolled out an A and a B side. A little bit nostalgic going back to Onua Domain yesterday, and all it sort of proved to me is Aucklanders, even on a public holiday, don't know how to organise themselves, because we still had people turning up 15 minutes after the game had started. So that was awesome to see a good crowd there, between sort of 3,500-4,000 people there. So it was great, and a good solid Blues performance. Like I say, sometimes you can't always take a lot out of pre-season, but I know talking to a couple of players at the end of the game, they got a bit of a tune-up after that first performance. And what I did enjoy was their second half defensive performance. I mean, it's like we all know in these preseason games you tend to leak a lot of points with all the changes coming and going, but in the second half, just to leak the one try, and it was a breakout try, I thought was a pretty impressive defensive performances and some real standout individual performance. Peter Arkey looks like he's a guy, and it's another argument for another day of guys playing overseas. Gee, looks like an even more complete player than what he was before he sort of left New Zealand. So, look, he's a good acquisition for the side. But I thought of also what it showed up yesterday with both teams, really. A lot of depth in these squads. And you asked the question before, who do I see as favourites? I guess you can't go past the four teams that were there last year in the semi-finals, the Blues, the Chiefs, the Crusaders. And, of course, you know, we always have an Australian team that throws a spanner in the works, the Brumbies. But I also reckon the Hurricanes will be better this year as well.
Yeah. There is a lot of talk about the Hurricanes. Big Warner Dearns, they reckon he could be the buy of the season. But when we look at the Australian teams, and I know that there is a gap, but I believe the gap is closing, AJ. I look at these Australian teams and I can see that, you know, there is going to be a lot of New Zealand influence in some of the coaching groups. And, you know, the Brumbies, they're always hard to beat in Canberra, but, you know, there is talk New South Wales could be the big improver.
Well, again, it's early doors for me. I've just looked at a couple of their games, as Stevie has said. Look, there's always one or two players who seem to show their wares a bit early in the season, maybe a bit fitter, but certainly the stars aren't there on the scene, and we won't see them in the first or second week of this competition, even third. So let's just wait and see. I see the Force have started well. They've had a couple of wins in their pre-season. The Brumbies one up, one down. Again, it's a wee bit too hard for me to decipher at this stage, but you are right. There's a lot of New Zealand influence in the Australian franchises, a lot of players who haven't made the cut here or have finished their careers overseas, yep, have come back to the Aussies. And, of course, with the Melbourne Rebels gone, it's just made it a bit tighter in the market there, a bit more to select from, but obviously a bit more quality that they can use in their team. So I'm looking for them to improve. Yes, I think the presence of Joe Schmidt there in international side, I've got a lot of time for Joe. I think he's set up some good direction there in the international scene. I think it's rubbed off into the franchise, but I definitely have no doubt that we'll be looking at our New Zealand franchises, at least three there when it comes to the business end. And as you said, Brumbies, Waratahs, or maybe even the Force, surprising. But that's good for the competition. I think that's what it's lacked, is the intensity of competition week in and week out. And that's why at times, you know, we do struggle at watching it.
We do indeed, Stephen. Just with the Aussie teams, obviously, we've mentioned the Brumbies, AJ's mentioned the Force. Obviously, we can't forget the Reds out of this. And New South Wales, you know, they've threatened to come back. But, you know, I just see that the Brumbies are the best out of those franchises.
Yeah, pretty much so. I suppose the big challenge for these Australian sides, we know how strong they are at home, and I think once again they'll be hard to beat at home, but it's, the problem for these Australian sides is actually winning away, and that was a bit of an issue for the Reds last year. They were good at home, not so good away, and if they can probably get past that little hurdle, I think they will be much more competitive. But it is quite noticeable that their squad depth just appears to be stronger across all four teams.
Absolutely. And then we have a look at, obviously, I'll be honest with you both, Moana Pacifica. I had a chat with former All Black Peter Alatini, and, you know, there's a lot of enthusiasm there, but without Arnie Sevier, I don't think they're going to pose the threat as they did the year before. And Fiji and Drua, well, if you play them in Lautoka, you might as well, they tend to just hijack you there. Aisha.
Yeah, look, we all love going to Fiji, but probably for different reasons, and that's lying in the sun and having a couple of Fijian bitters. But look, at home, just quickly, Fiji drew, always tough, playing in there in front of their home crowds. And you are right, Steve, it's about the consistency, and that's what it matters when it comes to the business end of the season. If you don't win, you know, 2-3 games away from home, you're really on your way out of that top six. So, agree. Let's see. That'll tell us if these Australian teams come over here and they can knock one or two of the franchises off here in New Zealand, then we'll start paying attention. But they're not good on the road, apart from the Brumbies. So, yeah, they need more consistency away from home. Fiji drew. Yeah, look forward to seeing them. They're always exciting. Moana Pacifica, yep, you nail on the head there, Piggy. Artie, he was the backbone of that side, the leader, the kamatawa, or whatever you want to call him. Without him, it'll be very interesting to see how they come together, how they go when they're under the pump, under pressure. Well, there's someone there to lead them and get them some valuable wins, because they're going to need it, and they're going to need it early. As I said, the first three or four rounds, that dictates your season. If you haven't got at least two wins, you're looking at three up, three down, or four up, four down. Yeah, your season's gone. So pretty cutthroat, but that's professional rugby.
Just your thoughts on the two Pacific sides, Fiji and Drua and Moana Pacifica.
Yeah, it's probably going to be up to somebody to take over that mantle that Ari Savia required. Miracle Failangi skippering this team this year. We know what an sort of inspirational player that he can be. I think the important thing for Moana to stay in games is to be competitive up front. They've got a reasonable tight five with a couple of other acquisitions that should make them a little bit stronger. I like the inclusion of Dominic Ropeke out of Wellington last year. Boy, underrated loose forward, and he'll bring something a little bit different. Not quite in the Ari Savia category, but once again, for them, I think important that they make their home games a fortress. And that was a great fortress for them up at North Harbour Stadium last year. I'm a little tad surprised they're taking a game down to Pukekohe, but we know we've got also a big Pacific Island community down in that area. Fiji and Drua, they've made a couple of good recruitments this year. Guys who have come back from playing overseas, namely one of their locks who will give them a lot of experience, and that's Timo Meana-Vanua, who's played for Northampton, and I think he might have played a little bit in France as well, and a couple of other key Joe Nasova, the winger. Boy, he's an absolute excitement machine. But once again, as AJ said before, these sort of teams have got to get consistency. We know what a danger they are at home, but there were games last year that they'll look back on that they actually didn't close out in the last 5 minutes, and they need to find an ability to lock those games in.
Okay, so we come to crunch time. Now we look at we have a top six playoffs, and obviously we look which of the who out of the New Zealand franchise, and this is a tough one, is at least. It's probably not going to make it, because we've got six. Now, I can't see five of the New Zealand base franchises making it. I'll be straight to the point. I think the one that probably looks the most vulnerable is the Highlanders, and for the simple reason is that it's just that the other New Zealand franchises, the Hurricanes, the Chiefs, the Blues, the Crusaders, they've got a lot more experience and depth. And plus the other thing, Fabian Holland, he's going to be out for 4 to 6 weeks of the Super Rugby season. AJ.
Yeah, look, very sad to see Fabian go. What an international start to his career he's had. So I wish him all the best. It didn't look too good, though, when
no,
he didn't come off. So,
no, not at all.
So he needs to get back on the road to recovery ASAP, because they will certainly miss him. And it would be question mark over the All Black coaching coming in, and Jamie Joseph looking to be in the mix definitely there with possibly Dave Rennie and who else they may have. Mind you, I think it would be a struggle at this stage of the year with most international coaches locked in till the World Cup. So, interesting times ahead in that. So, if Jamie gets the nod, there's another disruption. So, the Highlanders always seem to be on the last franchise that we seem to talk about. But I tell you what, they've got a great following crowd-wise, great support. We like an underdog at times, so I always cheer for them. And so, look, I'm going to put the whole five in and toss up between the Waratahs and Brumbies or whatever, but too early for me to make a call. And with the strength of rugby here at this stage, I'm still prepared to lock the five in, and I guess I'll be proved who's going to be there or thereabouts after round three or four.
Yes, your thoughts on this? Can the, you know, the Highlanders probably, with that blow to Fabian Hollands after 4 to 6 weeks, you know, can they still make the top six? And, you know, as AJ said, AJ's put a line in the sand saying he believes five of the six can make
very
it.
Early.
Very early. Very early. Hey, we're not putting money on this, AJ. It's all good.
It could go down very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, Stephen.
Yeah. I'd like to think all five could make it, but if I just have a feeling somewhere along each along the line, we're probably going to have to, some of these teams are going to end up cutting each other's throats. Sorry to use that terminology, but I think when it gets to the pointy end of the season, I think that's what we're going to see again. Some sides with so much desperation. Just on the Highlanders, I feel sorry that they're probably already going to start the season with almost a triple blow. Not just these obviously two players in Plejo and Holland, but what's also overhanging as well, who's going to be their head coach? Is it going to be Jamie Joseph? I guess that's another conversation for another day. But
just going to say about the head coach, he might sound like that. That's all I'll say. Speculation.
Okay. Well. There you go. They've got a big job for me. They've got a lot of excitement in their back division. You know, Tony Tau, Tito Harris, Talia, guys like that, and of course Tafatafa Nawai, or Jim as they call him. Possibly if you look at their potential weaknesses, just in that first five area, just somebody who can steer that ship around. We know what a talented player Cam Miller is, so this is a big season for him to take hold of that team jersey. But they have got Rishan Pasitoa, who's from Northland, but played more second five for Northland next year, but can fill in at first five. And also, once again, dare I say it, I know AJ will be nodding his head, these games start up front, and out of all the five franchises, they probably look the weakest in the tight five, even though they've brought in Lanini, the Argentinian, who his experience will be valuable, but they probably just look a bit short in that area for mine.
Yeah, you're dead right. It always comes down to that tight five and the engine and your squad. What's your backup, your reserves coming on, and you're dead right, Stevie. That's the only thing where they seem to have fallen from the side, and the missing of Fabian Holland, now, that's going to hurt them big time. So that's why we always look at them as the fifth team trying to make that top six. But as I said, they're the full squad and full fitness. They can play some exciting rugby. They never say die, but is it going to be good enough to see them in that top six? Well, we're going to find out.
Absolutely. Well, gentlemen, it's great to have you both back. Stephen, we've got no doubts that we will be chatting during the season. Obviously, you'll be covering our region club wide, as well as covering Super Rugby Aupiki. AJ, you will be back, and I've got no doubts we will be not only catching up on the show on Saturday, but catching up socially. Obviously, you'll take me to a bar where they've got a 4'8" height to let me in. So yeah,
we got the high stools. The last one, they didn't have any high stools for you, so we had to sit on a lounger. But then we nearly lost you. We were with Balu, of course.
Yeah, well, and Balu. Yeah, nothing wrong with Balu. He gave me a bet. He gave me a tip. So it's about time. What's going to buy him a beer, but I'll look to catch up with you and Mr. Balu one Friday afternoon. We maybe we not do a bit of lunch. Anyway, we'll leave you to it. AJ, thanks so much. Stephen, thank you so much, and have a great rest of the weekend.
Thanks.
Cheers, bye. Okay, that was AJ and Stephen Harris. So next up, we're 30 years of Super Rugby. We speak to the voice of a generation, Grant Nisbet, as Nisbet shares some of his memories of the first 30 years of Super Rugby.
Miles in Budapest. dress, my hidden treasure chest. Golden grand piano, my beauty focus, EOU. Ooh, you, ooh, I'd leave it all. My acres of a land I've achieved. It may be hard for you to stop and believe, but for you, ooh, you, ooh, I'd leave it all. For you, ooh, you, ooh, I divido. Give me one good reason why I should never make a change. Baby, if you want me, then all of this will go away. My many artifacts, the list goes on. If you just say the words, I'll up and run. Oh, to you, ooh, you, ooh, I'd leave it all. Oh, to you, ooh, ooh, I'd leave it all.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Just before we get on to our next guest, big shout out to Force Electrical. Force Electrical started in 2014 by my old mate Nick Brakovich, and I can tell you what, it's grown to be a trusted name across the wider Auckland and Northland region. Now, why you should choose them? First of all, reliability and knowledge that sets them apart. Also, what they do is they can do anything from residential to commercial projects, ongoing electrical maintenance, solar panel system with inverters and battery storage and ELV solutions. So, if you're looking for any of your electrical work, give Force Electrical a call. Their number is 021 628 341 or nick@forceelectrical.co.nz. Well, it's been 30 years since kickoff of Super Rugby, and here to join us, he has been the voice of a generation. He's just one of the, not only a great commentator, but a damn good bloke. Please welcome the legend, that's Grant Nisbet. Good morning, Grant. How you going, mate?
G'day, Evan. I'm very well, thank you, mate.
It's great to have you as part of the show. Listen, we look back, it's been 30 years since the start of Super Rugby, and, you know, 1995, the game went professional, and so then we started out from what was our NPC. We had five franchises. There was a lot of issues that there wouldn't be the same loyalty, it doesn't feel right, and then when it kicked off, it's kicked off in brilliantly with the Blues beating the Hurricanes, and what was a great match. Just some of your early memories of that first, of how this began.
Yeah, look, it was cobbled together pretty quickly, wasn't it? Because when the game went professional in 1996, you might remember there were all sorts of issues about a rebel league and all the rest of it. So New Zealand Rugby really had to save the game here, rather than sell out to overseas interest. And somebody came up with the idea of Super Rugby and Sanzar, and the whole thing was born, as you say. Palmerston North was the opening game, believe it or not, when you think back now. The Blues and the Hurricanes, the five New Zealand franchises have all survived, and some of the other franchises have come and gone. Of course, we don't no longer have South Africa. We no longer have Argentina. At one point, we had a Japanese team, didn't we? And so, look, it's been all over the place. Nowadays, of course, we've got a team in Fiji and Moana Pasifika as well. So there has been a lot of changes over 30 years.
There certainly has. And when you look back in those early years, you know, people that were sceptical after that first game, people were hooked. And when you remember it, you know, we knew about the Jonah Lomus, the great stars, and we knew about the great Blues team with Zinny Brooks, Sean Fitzpatrick. We knew about these great teams. But then new stars started to emerge, and one player in particular, I know you had the pleasure of commentating many, many times, Christian Cullen. He was one hell of a, I believe he was the one that really sparked Super Rugby in that early days.
Yeah, look, he was a generational player, there's no question about that, Christian Cullen, and he made his all-black debut back in 96, so in other words, that was the first time we really saw him on the national stage, was when he turned out for the Hurricanes. And there were many others as well. Look, it couldn't have started better, really. I mean, I know the Blues were dominant, in the first couple of years. They had an established team of international players, many of which, of course, had played in the previous year's World Cup in South Africa. And it's hard to believe now that the Crusaders were last in that first year, absolutely stone-cold motherless last. And within 2 years, they picked themselves up and actually won their first title.
And then they started their reign, and they won three in a row under the, firstly Wayne Smith, then Robbie Deans, then the Brumbies proved that they were the standard bearer, as they still are today for Australian rugby. But then we had a look at it, and then but during that time when we look at it, there were more teams came in, another team from South Africa. It got to Super 14, it got to Super 18, it got, I think if we could have had a Super 48, we would have almost found it. But looking back at it, like, you had that Blues era, that fantastic Blues era. Then the Crusaders started on their run. And of course, I know that, one game you were excited to commentate, and it became the most difficult game for you to commentate, would have been back in 2006. The Crusaders versus your beloved Hurricanes in the fog at Lancaster Park.
Yeah, look, it was certainly a memorable occasion, and I remember standing on the sideline before the game, about an hour and a half before the game, and I thought initially it was smoke. I thought somebody might have been burning some rubbish over the back fence, but no, it was a sea fog that came in, and by the time the players ran onto the field, you could barely see them. Certainly, you could hardly see them where we were sitting high up in the grandstand, Murray Mexted and myself, and it just became increasingly difficult to see anything. And our man on the sideline was Tony Johnson, and we decided that he'd be better off going around the other side of the field. I think it was called Jade Stadium in those days.
Yeah, it was.
It's had a few different names over the years. And he went around the other side because he could see what was happening on the far side of the field, things that we couldn't see. And it really was quite bizarre. I guess on reflection, the game should never have been played. It probably was, I mean, it's been a bizarre and a talking point and all the rest of it, but it really wasn't a game of rugby, and it certainly wasn't befitting of a final. I think there was only one try scored in the match, and most people, I think, agreed afterwards that it probably shouldn't have been played, but it had to be, I guess, because the schedule was so tight in those days. And I remember waking up Sunday morning in Christchurch, and it was exactly the same. So it probably wouldn't have worked if they'd held it 24 hours later. I'm not sure. But, yeah, totally bizarre.
It was. And, of course, when then we look back that Crusaders era, then obviously over the years we saw the South African teams dominate with the Bulls from Pretoria. And, you know, we look back and, of course, from all of the New Zealand teams won a title. We looked at that great Chiefs side under Dave Rennie, and Dave Rennie who proved that they could win two in a row. We look at some of we also look at, you know, that great match in Wellington, and Marty Banks still reckons it was one of your finest commentary moments was him getting the drop goal for the Highlanders. and then finally, I know you're a pro, Dizbo, but finally, you, as Hurricanes fans, finally got their first Super Rugby title, and then what happened was after 2019, the Crusaders were dominating. Then COVID-19 hit, things changed, and unfortunately with that we saw South Africa not part of Super Rugby, and of course the Jaguaris, who were beginning to prove to be quite a hard team to beat, also no longer part of Super Rugby.
They made a final one year in Christchurch, I seem to remember, and they were very competitive. Always hard to beat at home, quite clearly, but the fact that they had to come to Christchurch to play in a final might have acted against them a wee bit. I certainly still miss the South African teams. I know the travel was arduous. It's a long way to South Africa from here, and often teams would disappear and they'd play a couple of games over there and maybe one against an Australian team on the way home, and it became a sort of a mini tour. So in terms of travel, I guess the teams don't miss it, but I think we miss the the different style of rugby that the South African teams provide. Yeah. And I think that even permeates through to the top level. You know, we enjoyed playing our greatest rival, even though it was more in a provincial sense. And it would be nice one day to see the Warriors back in the competition. I think rugby in Argentina does marvellous work, really, when you consider they hardly have any internal competition. Most of their players are offshore, but nevertheless, they still punch way above their weight, particularly at World Cups, where they're always highly competitive.
And when you look at it, Greg Peters, he done a brilliant job as CEO of the Jaguares. We tend not to, we tend to forget it. And without mincing words, Grant Nisbo, I'll be honest with you, it doesn't, since COVID-19, we've had our Super Rugby Aotearoa, Australia's had their own competition to what we have now, Super Rugby Pacific, and we love it. We love Super Rugby, but it just doesn't have that without the South Africans and without the Jaguares, we don't have that intensity there.
Not quite the same. No, it's not quite the same. You're quite right. And several of the Australian teams have been pretty disappointing. We saw the demise of the Rebels from Melbourne. The Western Force are still there and they can be a bit of a niggly team, but the flag bearer right through from Australia's point of view have been the Brumbies, that's for sure. They had some great eras, and they're still very tough to beat, as we know. In the Gregan Larkin era, they were outstanding, and they're still tough to beat. Waratahs have probably been disappointing, even though they've grabbed a title, or maybe even two, I'm not sure. And the Reds have been a bit up and down as well. So when you throw the New Zealand teams in, the only other team that really has been, who takes South Africa away, the only other team that's been highly competitive year in, year out, have been the Brumbies.
Yeah. I'd have to agree with you. They've always been that consistency. Like, you know, you have a look at it. They've won two titles. And I know the Australian teams, like the New South Wales won their title, the Reds won their title, unfortunately against my beloved Crusaders. But, hey, that's what happens then. But when we look back, and which team do you think really has defied Super Rugby in the 30 years, the best team? Obviously, we look at it. Obviously, the first name that comes out is the Crusaders. Now, you probably, is it the early Crusaders? Is it the Crusaders under Robbie Deane? Or was it the Crusaders under Scott Robertson before COVID?
Yeah, well, all of the above, I think. They've won so many damn titles nowadays, it's pretty hard to quantify which was the better team. I guess it'll be a lot of fun putting together the best Crusaders team of Super Rugby, combining all the different eras. But, you know, they came out of the blue to win in 1998, having been last, as I said, 2 years earlier, and they've just maintained a real consistency. I know there have been the odd blip here and there, and there was certainly a blip in 2024 when Rob Penny took over, but there was business, normal business was resumed last year. It's going to be very interesting, you know, because the Crusaders have always played well on their home grounds, and particularly so since they've been at the current stadium, which is not a great game, not a great venue by any means. And if you go down there on a wet, cold night in Christchurch, you've got little or no hope. Now there's a roof on, I think teams will actually back up and think, boy, we're going to be highly competitive here because, you know, the lousy conditions you normally get out at Addington, it's not going to happen anymore. Yeah. Not going to happen anymore. So I'm going to be interested to see how the Crusaders go in 2026.
Okay, and wrap it up. To wrap it up here, Nisbo, and I know that I loved your commentaries, you and Big Mac Murray Mexter to yourself and Justin Marshall now, but you've seen so many great players come through. Who would you say was the standout player in the 30 years of Super Rugby?
Oh, look, people ask me who's the best rugby player I've ever seen. I always say Christian Cullen, and I'm not going to deviate from that by any means, but when you're looking at Super Rugby and titles won and all the rest of it, you know, Dan Carter, Richie McCaw, some of those players, and in the early days, you mentioned their names, Inzan Brook, Sean Fitzpatrick. We've seen the very best over 30 years, and it's thrown up some outstanding players. There'll be more to come for sure, but as I say, Christian Cullen was, for me anyway, best rugby player I ever saw.
Absolutely. Well, Grant, thanks for so much for making yourself free. It's always great to have a chat. Next time you're in Auckland, if you're free, because I know you're a busy old man, you're a busy man. I wasn't going to call you an old man because you're not old at all.
I am an old man.
Yeah. And we must catch up for a coffee because, you know, I will have to say I look forward to listening to your good commentary during the season.
Good on you, Eamon. Thanks, mate.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks a lot, Grant. Fantastic. Grant Nisbet, the voice of a generation. Absolutely brilliant. This morning I was able to conduct an interview with Adrian Barry from Off the Ball in Ireland as we looked at yesterday's match and we looked at the Six Nations coming up. So I'll just get to that right now.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Weekend. Well, yesterday, Waitangi Day, we had the privilege of watching the France versus Ireland. I have to say, France 36, Ireland 14, you know, I've said it. If you ever want to see how rugby is played, how rugby should be played, watch France yesterday, because we didn't have that much silly box kicking. The play, it was just simple, sublime French rugby. Unfortunately, on the other side, Ireland really, had a few injury concerns. Andy Farrell's has made a few tough decisions as he looks towards next year in the Rugby World Cup. But here to join us is Adrian Barry from Off the Ball in Ireland. Good morning, Adrian.
Evan, how's it going?
Well, I would have to say not bad at all, mate. Good to have a public holiday yesterday. Good to have rest up. But I have to just say to you right now, I looked at that game yesterday and I would say this to you. I was never so impressed with a French side. That even 1-15, they looked a complete unit. Ireland, really, I know that you've lost it. I know that you probably had an inexperienced front row, but really, you weren't made to dominate. I know there was a bit of hope within that second half, but really, this was pretty comprehensive by France.
Yeah, well, I think from being kind of nilled at halftime, low hope right from the second half. You know, you can only imagine given the scoreline at halftime, we were sort of hoping upon hope that something would happen in the second half, and it did. And you're absolutely right. Like with 20 minutes to go, you're thinking another score here, and we did come close to that. Like suddenly the game could be on, but like look. We got a hiding. It wasn't quite a humiliation. It wasn't quite embarrassing. It could have been all of those things. But ultimately, it wasn't in the end. And like, listen, you know, when you dip into the box of reasoning, Eamon, you might call it excuses. I'll go reasoning here. But when you dip into that box, you know, you're pulling out. There's a lot of stuff in there, okay? I definitely think, you know, you mentioned about the front row and elsewhere across the pitch. There's up to 7 or 8 players that probably would have played in that team had they been available. For me, really, when you boil it down, a humbling defeat, you know, we're not a million miles out from a World Cup where, you know, our graph needs to be going up and it's very much going down. I think if you'd rewound the clock for this game and had it 12 months ago where we were not by choice, but by injuries, we were blooding an awful lot of new players.
Yep.
And getting beaten by France in Paris on the opening round of the Six Nations, I'd have said, I'll take it, you know, for future growth. But that's sort of not where we're at. We're a little bit closer to the World Cup than we should be in terms of kind of going back to basics. But I'm going to take the positives out of it and say we've blooded a lot of new players, and it's not all doom and gloom.
Well, I was going to say you sound very much like a politician at this stage, Adrian. I'm going to be quite honest with you, but I will say this right now. I really feel since the retirement of Johnny Sexton, that number 10 jersey is really becoming to become an Achilles heel for Andy Farrell. When we look at it, like, Prendergast was given a chance, Jack Cowley's been given a chance, but there's just, he's really at some point, Andy Farrell's got to decide who his number one is, and he can't just decide
He wants Sam Prendergast to work, Eamon. He wants Sam Prendergast to work more than anything else in any other selection or other area of the pitch. He wants desperately for that to work. And the reason I say that is that he has gone to him in most of the big games. Yes, Jack Crowley was there for a while, and he is the other great hope. Since then, Harry Byrne has started to push Prendergast out of the team at Leinster, and a lot of people suspected a few days ago that maybe he might be the one that would get the nod. You know, there were three. We were in a position where there were three live options for the number 10 shirt against France, and all of them had flaws. And that's where we're at. Prendergast is a precocious talent. He's a young player. Some of his play last night was absolutely sublime. Like, this guy is an exceptional talent. And now here comes the caveat, with ball in hand, with Ireland going forward, when they've got front foot rugby, as he does a lot with his province, with Leinster. But his Achilles heel, as you mentioned, Eamon, really is his defence. He's a light lad, no shortage of bravery. Not unlike Ronan Agar, I feel, in a lot of ways in that regard. He gets ball down his channel an awful lot. Teams know that is his Achilles heel. He did have one brilliant toe-tap tackle as Biel Barry bore down on the Irish line last night, and he actually, as it turned out, was only to delay him by about 4 seconds from inevitably crossing the line. But that's his Achilles heel. And really, you know, Crowley has better defence, but lacks a little bit of that star power going forward. Harry Byrne is probably the better mix of all two, but he's not as good at either. Does that make sense?
It does indeed, it does indeed. And really, I think, probably looking at Ireland, I think they, to be honest with you, their play looked very predictable last night. And I should know it because I'm an All Black fan. Our play is predictable. Anyway, moving on to later on in the day for you guys, and on later on for you, 3:10 a.m. here in New Zealand, Italy versus Scotland. Scotland, to me, have been the nearly team of the Six Nations. They have probably the most lethal backline in the competition. Italy, you know, you never, at home, you never doubt them. To me, I feel Scotland are too good for Italy in this one.
Yeah, I think when you talk about, when you ask people's predictions here, right? Like, people are very realistic here, Eamon, as well, okay? Like, nobody really is saying that Ireland, even in advance of last night, there wasn't really too many pundits here who were saying Ireland were going to finish. It was third or fourth. That's really, you know, where we're at. Which is a huge fall off from our expectations, apart from anything else, even up to 12 months ago. But the one that will challenge us for third is Scotland. Now, you know, nobody beats, there's a famous expression about it could have been a former boxer. I should have the quote exactly to mind, you know, but it was nobody beat Eamon Hallisey 25 times in a row. We've beaten Scotland 9 times in a row, and it has come close at various points. But like you said, they've got some exceptional talent in the ranks as well.
Oh, they'll
make light work of Italy, and I do think we'll be shooting it out with them for third.
I think you will. I think Italy will cause enough problems there. Then we go later on to Twickenham, and of course England versus Wales. Well, this England side, the side which Steve Borthwick has got, is a very, very good side, very experienced. Obviously, Noah Doshi there, but they're led by Jamie George, Sam Underhill, one hell of a player, Henry Pollock. Now, I'm looking forward to seeing him come off the bench because he is some sensation. But, you know, Tommy Freeman, Freddie Stewart, well, Wales, what have they got? You have a look what they can offer. Obviously, Lewis Rees is in it at the back, one hell of a good player. Josh Adams, Danny Wiggs, but you have to, we have to be honest with you. This comes down for Steve Tandy as just seeing where they're at and probably salvaging pride, because I'll be straight to the point. There's no way in the world, and I've been known to be caught out before, and I'm not hoping it's not this weekend, but I think England just too good, and just too good for Wales, and probably, along with France, I believe the favourites to win this competition.
Yeah, Faye Rebozo out for England as well, by the way, another one of those kind of precocious talents. Started all of their autumn tests, had got an injury in training, and I was actually really looking forward to seeing him as well, but he's out. But yeah, listen, one of the things about the Six Nations, I know there are exceptions to this, but one of the things about it, and like not unlike your own rugby championship, like there tends to be very few huge mismatches, really. I think this one's England Wales is going to be the biggest margin of all the games in the Six Nations. You just have to feel for Welsh rugby fans at the minute, like they have walked themselves into a situation where there's all this talk about potentially shutting down one of their clubs, the financial crisis that's there for a long time now. They haven't been able to keep their best players in Wales. They'll go off and play in England and elsewhere. France, of course, and beyond, and look for the NFL, like Louis Rizabot. There's no key made for the moment. They're going backwards at a rate of knots, and for a nation that people of our generation and slightly older will know, you know, when you look back to the 60s and 70s, particularly, like the quality, they're winning brilliant rugby they would play. They're in a deep hole. It's very difficult to see a way out.
And probably the other thing that is hanging over is that I've just seen a couple of articles, a potential that automatic relegation could mean you're relegated to the European Nations Cup. Now, it's not only the humiliation of being last, but it's also, it comes at a huge financial cost. You no longer have Ireland. You no longer have Scotland. You no longer have these big European teams going to your grounds.
Yeah, I was really surprised. We were just chatting before we came on air about that. I was really surprised to hear that that might be something that would happen. I assumed that all of the Six Nations would hold on by their fingernails to the deck to avoid that type of situation. But it's always something that I think real rugby fans, listen, maybe it's easy. If I'm a Welsh fan on the phone to you right now, I'm probably not saying this because, you know, that's the direction they're headed. But it's really the right thing to do for European rugby, right? Like, the likes of Romania and Georgia and these countries a goal.
Well, I'm just going to say something else to you. When you look at it, there's probably a couple of other rugby countries which have European-based players are probably looking to join that competition, and I think we say South Africa and Argentina, but, you know, this... Obviously, Tom Harrison has rejected the idea in the past. I'll be honest with you. I've seen Wales Online is very credible for some of the information they do put out, especially when it comes to rugby. But I'm looking at it, the more and more I look at it, Adrian, I just can't see it now.
As in which?
Well, I just cannot see. I can see that. I cannot see because it's going to come down to money.
You can't see that they would bring relegation.
Yeah, no, money. I'm looking at it now.
No, and I'm with you. I'm with you on that totally. I'm astonished that you say like Wales, it's on Wales Online. They are a reputable source.
And the Express as well too. There, but that it's come up on the Express as well too.
I would be astonished if it was brought in. It would be the right thing to do. Like, there's absolutely no getting away from it. Like, how can we talk about the growth of rugby in Europe specifically and not bring in a relegation from the Six Nations? It makes absolutely no sense. You have, Georgia are probably the best team of the teams coming through. Romania are there, Portugal are there, Spain are there. Like, some of these countries are obviously competing in the sevens, but like, there's no incentive. Like, it's a Six Nations seconds campaign for them to, you know, pick around the fringes and stuff. I'd use a word here, Eamon, if we weren't on air, that would be an alternative for unacceptable. It's not give them a chance.
Yeah, well, I've just looked through our PSA regulations, and believe me, we're not allowed to say that. And before we get ourselves in any trouble, Adrian, I want to thank you for making yourself available, and hopefully we can chat very, very soon.
Good man, Eamon. Good to chat.
Thanks.
And that was Adrian Barry from Off the Ball. Next up, we have a Broden Nucky from One News.
To me, my life got in between. Tried to square, not be in there, but said that I should have been. Hold back the river, let me look in your eyes. Hold back the river so I can stop for a minute and see where you hide. Hold back the river, hold back. Once upon a different life, we rub our backs into the sky. Now we're caught against the tide. Those distant days are flashing by.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender, and just before we get to our next guest, just something from our sponsors. Weekend mission sorted, mate. Wash the car, rinse the boat, clean the bait station, keep the wife's tomato plants all happy with a water smart tank. No water restrictions, no worries. Different sizes to suit your property. Check out Water Smart. .co.nz and take control today. Thank you very much, Andrew Olsen from WaterSmart. Well, we have the week that was and the week can coming up, and there must be a roster at One News, because joining us from One News, a big welcome to Broden Nucky. Good morning, Broden.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, mate, and it's a great pleasure. Now, I know that they give you the roster. I'll have a word to Mel. I hope if she can just send me the roster on who's going to be coming up in the next month, and I can work it out whether it's you, Zion, Kate, Michelle's initially, Pat does a bit of stuff for me. So, you know, I'm sort of like, I may have to get a wee office at TVNZ if the powers that be, or maybe they can sponsor the segment, the state broadcaster. I think I'm pushing you know what uphill. So we look at the week that's just been ahead, and of course then we had a look. India just far too strong for the Black Caps in that 2020 series. They just looked so dominant, didn't they?
Oh, they do. I mean, you have to give credit where it's due. This India side obviously has circled this tournament as one they wanted, and after that ODI series, you know, there was maybe thoughts of, oh, you know, we're in the right space, but they came into that series and they really laid down a statement for this tournament. I think they very much are the team to beat.
Yeah, they certainly are. Of course, as New Zealand plays Afghanistan up first, it had a bit of a scare against the United States. God. I was just thinking, you could imagine PM Luxton taking a call from the Orange Man in America. God, we bat you at cricket. We're so great because I spoke to them. But anyway, also, you know, that becomes a crucial match because South Africa looked very, very good in their group as well, Baden.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think everyone can agree the build-up to this hasn't been probably as smooth as the Black Caps would have liked. I mean, when they announced this World Cup squad, there was five players under an injury cloud. Obviously, Adam Milne since has been ruled out with his calf injury. And then we just found out yesterday that there's been a bug going through the team. There's been an illness, and Devon Conway and Rajan Ravindra have been some of the worst affected by it. So the in terms of the preparations, it hasn't been great. And then you've got this big game against Afghanistan first up because, yeah, as you say, South Africa is also in this pool. Only the top two are going to advance. So losing this first one can really put you in a hairy situation. So they definitely know how important tomorrow is, and we'll just have to wait and see if the boys can rally and hopefully get over this, this illness that's been sweeping through the camp.
Absolutely. And, of course, also during the week, some news popped out on many websites that the All Blacks, with their coaching, they've asked Steve Hansen and they've asked Ian Foster to apply. This, I don't know what is happening here. It just seems as though the people we want, we may not be able to get. And to be honest with you, both of them have been good servants of New Zealand rugby. Steve Hansen, a World Cup winning coach. Ian Foster, probably the nearly man of New Zealand rugby. But really, this looks like to me, and I feel a bit, it's a bit controversial that I say this, this feels like a la Eddie Jones for the Wallabies.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of back yourself into a corner a little bit, don't you, when you make the requirements that it has to be a New Zealander and they have to have international coaching experience. Suddenly the pool gets very small from there. And when a guy like Joe Schmidt already rules himself out, you know, you're looking at those two well-established front runners that everyone's been talking about, of course, Jamie Joseph and Dave Rennie. But yeah, as we saw in reports earlier this week, they've gone to both Foster and Steve Hansen there. And look, personally, I don't think they're probably interested in the role. They've had their time. They've given their contributions to the jersey in that position. But I wouldn't be surprised if maybe there could be conversations as to whether they come in as that mentor role that Wayne Smith has recently had, you know? Someone that can help these guys out and knows what it takes to succeed at that highest level. So yeah, we'd have to see, but yeah, I would be very surprised if either of them actually did put their hand up and applied for the position.
Yeah, it would surprise me, but I think the mentorship possibly will be in there, or if it is going to be Jamie Joseph, maybe someone like a Steve Hansen coming to maybe be director of coaching at the Highlanders. Could be that's where we could be looking at this stage. Also, so during the week, and it's not a hunt, it's 99.9 confirmed, so it is confirmed. State of Origin, next year, Eden Park. I can't wait to see the home of the Blues, and it's going to be the home of the New South Wales, hopefully. I think this is going to be fantastic, because when we look at it, let's have a look. Like, we both live in Auckland, and getting to Eden Park should be easy, but it hasn't been easy. By next year, we should have an adequate rail system to take people there. I think everyone's saying they're spending $5 million. Yes, we could spend $5 million on other stuff, but what we get out of it, especially here in Auckland, especially in New Zealand, we get a lot of money coming into our economy. I think it will have great atmosphere for great atmosphere for during the week. And, you know, to me, I think this will be brilliant.
Oh, no, I totally agree with you. I mean, that's it. We can all agree that it's at that 99 percentile. I believe the reason it hasn't been confirmed is because the government probably wants it to be part of that event attraction package that they're announcing soon. But in terms of the actual event itself, you're right. It's going to bring in a ton of fans, but also not just those international fans that are coming across from Aussie, but you think of all your fans down in Christchurch that have turned out for the Warriors in recent years, the ones that have turned out in Wellington. They're all going to come up to Auckland as well, and it's just going to be a fantastic a fantastic fixture celebrating the best in the game. I'd hope it'll be the start of something that can perhaps, you know, semi-regularly take place where they bring Origin across, because there is a massive fan base of rugby league over here.
there certainly is, and I think, you know, I think it just will be good. Okay, it's going to be on 9:30 p.m. at night here in New Zealand to suit the Australian TV audience, and if people, you know, who live around the area, it's on too late, around Eden Park, say it's on too late, well, it's bringing money into the local economy, and secondly, it is an Australian, it's an Australian thing, so we've got to cater to them. That's just the way it is. I wasn't going to touch on this. I meant to text you yesterday, but this thing with Billy Meehan, not good, is it, with boxing, New Zealand boxing?
No, and I mean, look, the fact that you've had guys like David Nicker coming out as well and sharing his own experiences and now throwing the support behind the ones that have been brave enough, you know, to bring this to the surface. It's not a great look for New Zealand boxing, but in the same token, at least it has been brought to the surface now, and hopefully sharing some light on this investigation, we can get to the bottom of this and Boxing New Zealand, and obviously all the athletes that fall in under that of the amateur scene can really get something out of this, and we can move forward.
Absolutely. Anyway, and of course we have the Phoenix lost last night. Big good win by the Phoenix women, top of the table. They actually looked really good. They were, you know, they looked like they were knocking the ball around. They looked a very confident side. Phoenix men's now, big signing of Sarpreet Singh, who's been in Europe. He's obviously come back because he wants to make sure he's on that plane going to the USA, having game time. But you know, Phoenix at times looked brilliant, and other times their defence looked absolutely woeful.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those struggles, I guess, that they've had all season where, as you say, for moments they look like this world-beating team that could easily be in the playoffs and you know, be really challenging those top sides. And credit to them, you know, bringing in guys like Tui Loma and now Sarpreet Singh. You know, obviously it shows that they've got something down there, but then they do. They just frustrate you with those moments where they seem to just fall apart. And I mean, last night, obviously, you know, there was that chance there in the second half where Armiento went down, and initially they thought they were going to get the penalty, and the VAR comes in and you know, and took that away. And so that seemed to throw them off as well. But on the flip side of that, you then look at how the women are going, and, you know, they have really hit their stride. You know, you can clearly see the impact that Bev Priestman has had on this club, and she's now got them playing in a way that is just exuding confidence. And there wasn't really a moment yesterday watching the women where you thought, oh, you know, they're in trouble here. They look like a team that deserves to be the top of the ladder.
They certainly do. And, of course, we've got the Winter Olympics that started. We've got the big air snowboarding, so obviously three have qualified in there. And, of course, then we look at the weekend ahead. Obviously, Winter Olympics, we'll be keeping all eyes on our New Zealanders. I'm expecting that we're going to have a good medal haul list at this Winter Olympics. And, of course, Auckland FC versus Sydney. It's crunch time for Auckland FC, as far as I can see.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, talking to Corica, Steve Corica, the coach, during the week, you know, he completely conceded that last month was probably the toughest rut or slump that they've had in the club's history. I mean, they only won one game, drew two, lost three. You know, that's just unheard of for these Black Knights, but it's almost the curse of they came in so successful that a slump like this does stand out so much. So obviously, a big part of that, he said, was their lack of focus, or he feels their mentality was switching off in the late game. You know, last season they were a club that was scoring those late game goals. In this sort of slump that they've had in the last month, they've been the ones that have been conceding them. So there's been a lot of talk about that late game and the mentality they need to bring to that. And then, of course, there's also been a lot of talk about the goalkeeping situation and with, you know, obviously that unfortunate injury to Ollie Sale.
Absolutely, and of course then we have Super Bowl on Monday, Seattle Seahawks versus New England Patriots. Now, many fans and many Kiwi NFL fans compare the New England Patriots to Canterbury Rugby. Nobody likes them.
Absolutely.
And by the way, I'm from Christchurch. I'd be very careful.
For those that know NFL well enough, for this squad to have had the dynasty they had under Bill Belichick and Tom Brady as their quarterback, And then everyone thinks, right, those guys are gone. Finally, New England's an afterthought. They're going to go into a rebuilding phase. For them to be back less than a decade later and contesting another Super Bowl with another what looks like very promising young quarterback, the rest of the league's just looking around going, what went wrong? How are these guys already back in the picture and sort of rubbing our faces in it, you know? It's going to be a fantastic game to see. And, yeah, for me, the big storyline is the quarterbacks. I look at Drake May as this young upstart. He's only his second year in the league, whether he can really live up to the situation. On the other side there is Sam Darnold, the veteran journeyman who has been unwanted by teams for the last 6 years and now suddenly finds himself with a chance to lift up the Lombardi. So it'll be fantastic to see.
Well, Broden, I have to say, you've been fantastic, mate. Really enjoyed our chat. And no doubt, now you're on the official roster. You're on the official TVNZ roster to now join the Sports Weekender. I've got no doubt that you will be available if Zion's not available. Or else it'll be passed on to someone else. I did have Zion on about that, actually, just to be honest with you. But, no, really enjoyed it. Good chat, mate, and you have a wonderful weekend.
No, absolutely. Pleasure was all mine. Thank you so much for the debut. I really enjoyed it. And, looking forward to catching up again sometime.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, you don't get paid for this.
not a worry. It's just talking sport, mate. It's what we love.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks a lot, Broden.
Cheers.
That was Broden Nucky. Brilliant, eh? Brilliant. Okay, next up, we will talk to Seamus Martin from Between Two Bears podcast.
I did my best to notice when the call came down the line. Up to the platform of surrender, I was brought but I was kind. And sometimes I get nervous when I see an open door. Close your eyes, clear your heart. Cut the cord. Are we human? Or are we dancer? My sign is vital. My hands are cold. And I'm on my knees looking for the answer. Are we human? Or are we dancer? Pay my respects to grace and virtue. Send my condolences to good. Give my regards to soul and romance. They always did the best they could. And so long to devotion. You taught me everything I know. Wave goodbye, wish me well. Gotta let me go. Are we human? Or are we dancer? My sign is vital. My hands are cold. And I'm on my knees looking for the answer. Are we human? Or are we dancer? Sign is vital. My hands are cold. And I'm on my knees looking for the...
Welcome, everyone, back to the Sports Weekender. Wow, we come to this part of the show, and just before we go to it, a special shout-out to our sponsor. If you're looking to buy, looking to sell, looking to get on that Auckland property market, the best person you can call is Robert Thompson from Barfin & Thompson in Epsom. Robert has a great reputation in the real estate industry, professional, knows the stuff, and to beat, he's a good bloke as well too. So give Robert a call. His number is 021-737-949 or r.thompson, and that's Thompson with a P, at barfords.co.nz. And here to join us, as he joins us every Saturday from Between Two Beds podcast, Seamus Martin. Good morning to you, mate.
Good morning, Eamon. How are you doing?
Oh, listen, mate, really, really good. Beautiful day here in Auckland, actually. So we've got a big week of football coming up, and of course, obviously, I heard you on the commentary in the Phoenix Women's game. By the way, very good call, mate. Very, very good call. But we started off with OFC Pro League, and this Pro League is, you know, Auckland FC are really dominating this, but I was interested in some of the results over the past week. South Island United, the other side, really earning a very good draw against South Melbourne.
Yeah, it is at the moment Auckland FC head and shoulders, isn't it? They're 5 from 5. They play later on today against the Solomon Kings, who sit in fourth place. But yeah, for mine, I was asked earlier in the week about, you know, why is this Auckland FC side dominating the Pro League? Well, I think it comes back to foundations and systems. You know, you've got a guy like Luke Casserly, who's the coach, who's been really involved with the A-League side right up until the OFC Pro League kicked off. So I think they're able to lean on, you know, the resources that they have at their disposal, sports science, recovery, etc. And, you know, already up in Papua New Guinea in Series 2 of this Pro League, they've won both games. The first one against the hosts, PNG Hikari United, 2-0. They backed that up with a 4-0 midweek win over Tahiti United. So not conceding goals, which is always a great start. But, you know, they do seem to be the form side, the team to beat. South Melbourne, the Australian side in this competition, are sitting in second place. But that 3-3 draw against South Island United is probably the match of the OFC Pro League so far. Really exciting encounter. I do think South Island will be a little bit disappointed that they were held goalless against the Solomon Kings midweek. That was a nil-all draw, and I think they will be a little bit frustrated about that result. They're sitting in, there's a group of teams there with 5 points each that are all sitting outside the top four. South Island United will be in action later today as well, up against the hosts, Hikari PNG United.
So are we still in Papua New Guinea, are we?
We still are up in Papua New Guinea. We are, yep. Series 2, third match day up there. One set of game, two match days to go up there. So, a couple of games today. The New Zealand team's both in action. Auckland versus the Solomon Kings and Hikari versus South Island United before they all pack up and they move to Melbourne for Series 3.
Yeah, because that's when it gets interesting, when we go to Melbourne. But, yeah, I can see Auckland FC winning, but for South Island United, they really need this win to basically keep in touch with Auckland FC and South Melbourne.
Yeah, that's right. And, I mean, the game against Hikari, who seem to be the team propping up the competition at the moment, the club from Papua New Guinea, they've got that today. Whilst it is at home for Papua New Guinea, they haven't been able to really fire a shot. They only scored their first goal midweek, a 2-2 draw against Vanuatu United. The coach, Marcus Guzmao, resigned after the fixture against Auckland on last weekend. So they do seem like they're not as settled and stable as some of these other teams that are in the competition. But, you know, Auckland, as we said, head and shoulders. South Melbourne are the two top teams that everyone's chasing. But that pack behind, it's pretty close. So Buller FC, the home of Roy Krishna, are currently in third place. And Vanuatu, you know, just a win behind as well. So, look, really interesting, really even, it seems, in the middle of the pack. But, the top two sides really starting to emerge, which are Auckland FC and South Melbourne from Australia.
And then we move on to the A-League. Well, last night, big signing for the Phoenix of Sapri Singh coming home, trying to get on that plane to get to America. But, you know, sadly went down 3-2 to the Victory. But at times, you looked at the Phoenix and thought, God, they're playing some great football. But at the back, defensively, they're just... Bill Tuiloma, I don't know whether he's not adapted to it. Isaac Hughes has been probably holding that defence together. But, you know, really, there has to be some soul-searching before this derby.
Yeah, it was Giancarlo Italiano, the Wellington Phoenix coach, I think in the post-match mentioned, not for the first time this season, the defensive lapses are really hurting his side. So, you know, he was lamenting the second and third goals. If you think back to a match a couple of weeks ago as well, you know, you had Bill Tuiloma and Albie Kelly-Heald in goal, a couple of brain explosions that cost them the game there too. So, yeah, just at the end, the defensive end of the Wellington, they do seem to be struggling. Carlo Amiento, I should say, is putting together a really impressive season in my mind. He's coming up big with goals at the right times, but his influence as well in that front third is really, really starting to grow. And I'm looking forward to seeing how Sarpreet Singh is going to fit into that side. Remy Nazarene is a player of a similar nature. And I'm looking forward to seeing how those two players link together and bring in the likes of Carlo Amiento and Ifeanyi as well. Look, it's an exciting prospect, I think, if you're a Yellow Fever or a Wellington Phoenix fan, to see this team start to purr and start to get into action in the back half of the season. It is still such a close competition that despite another loss yesterday against Melbourne, they are still within touching distance of the top six, and you only need to string together two or three results and you'll find yourself back into the conversation around the playoffs. So Newcastle Jets at the moment are the team that everybody is chasing. And, you know, not long ago, they were sort of mid-table as well. So, you know, you put a run of form together and you start to leapfrog up the table. But for me, there's a really, really interesting clash later on today, which is Auckland FC versus Sydney. This is the team in second position, Sydney against Auckland. They play each other again midweek before that third instalment of the derby. So this is a really season-defining week for me in terms of Auckland FC and their fortunes. You know, this is a real, I think, the biggest pressure that Steve Corica and his side have been in 1.5 seasons of being in existence. There's a goalkeeping crisis after Ollie Sale, unfortunately, you know, a season-ending injury in his first start. Terrible for Ollie, and we wish him a speedy recovery. They've signed Jimmy Hilton on a short-term deal from Marconi Stallions, which means Michael Vaut gets the start again, and there were some question marks over him coming into a big game big two games against Sydney. So it really is an interesting time for the Port and, you know, for Auckland FC fans. I wonder whether they will turn out. It's the middle of a long weekend in Auckland, and you and I know Auckland it becomes a ghost town almost in these long weekends with people getting away and getting out of there. So
I suspect there's going to be a good crowd, Seamus. I think they'll get a decent crowd, mate.
Well, I hope so, because I the fans haven't been turning out like they did in season one. I don't think we can hide away from that fact. Yes, the numbers are high, but they're not the 15,000-16,000 that we were seeing in season one, and people start to vote with their feet. We can be a fickle crowd here in New Zealand, and when results don't go your way, that's when people vote with their feet and decide to do something else with their time. So, look, I'm really hoping that Auckland can get their season back on track. It just doesn't seem to be flowing like it was, and I feel like a broken record every time I come on each week about there isn't that same air of invincibility or even that arrogance about the Auckland FC team. There's a fragility there which hasn't previously been displayed by this team. So look, really hoping it galvanizes them and they put in a really strong performance and send a warning shot back across anybody like me who might be doubting their title credentials.
Absolutely. And then the A-League Women's yesterday, the Phoenix versus Perth Glory. I watched that match. The commentator wasn't bad, actually, I have to say that. But but I have to say, I quite enjoyed it. That Phoenix women's side, they're playing with confidence. They're knocking the ball around. And I felt, you know, good on Beth Priestman. You know, about four or five weeks ago, we had our doubts about this side. But now they're proving us wrong.
Yeah, and look, this is what I'm saying with the men's side. If they can put a run of form together like Beth Priestman's women's side have done, all of a sudden they go rocketing up the table. So overnight, Wellington Phoenix go top of the Ninja A-League, the women's competition. They leapfrog Brisbane Roar, Melbourne City, I should say, who was sitting in first place. And look, I personally think they should have won by more. I think they really dominated a Perth side who, in my mind, were very disappointing. Didn't hardly fire a shot, really. It was a bit of an arm wrestle, a bit of an exercise in frustrating Wellington. The one shining light for me is if you are going to be a serious title contender, you need to know how to win and to win ugly. To loop back to Auckland FC, that's what they were doing last year. They were grinding out results. They were scoring in stoppage time. I think Bev Priestman will be really satisfied with a 1-0 win when they haven't played at their best. I think that's the mark of a team that is really starting to come into good form. So, look, Michaela Woods, for me, the American signing who was signed as an injury replacement for Tess Medard, the midfielder. Geez, she's an energizer. And she sets the tone defensively for that team. She defends from the front. She chases everything down. And yesterday's goal was an example. She picked the pocket of McKenna, the defender, or Zog, perhaps the defender, slotted it home with aplomb. And they are really, really looking the goods. And they back it up next week with another home game against Central Coast Mariners. And I think the Yellow Fever are really getting it behind them. That game will be back at Porirua Park. So back at their spiritual home, their fortress at Porirua Park. So it is really exciting for Bev Priestman. And chatting to her before the game, you know, there's a real confidence about her and the way she's leading this team. And she made it very clear to me that the expectation of the players is that they do go on a run like they are at the moment and really look to, you know, put the screws on their opposition. And at the moment, I don't think there's a team that are playing as good a football as Wellington in the A-League Women's. They're the top-scoring team, and they've got the best defensive record in the league. There's not much more you can ask for.
Absolutely. So we move to our EPL picks. Well, there's one game we couldn't stuff up. Leeds 3, Nottingham Forest 1. So, you know, there's testing times for Sean Dyche at Nottingham Forest at the moment, Seamus. But I will go through the weekend's games. And anyone that wants to listen to our predictions and put money on it, please don't. Anyway, we start off Manchester United versus Tottenham. Fulham versus Everton, Burnley versus Newcastle. Burnley versus West Ham, sorry.
Let's start with that one because that's 18 plays 19. That is a huge game. That's the classic six-pointer. And you know what? I can't separate those two sides. I'm going to say that finishes in a draw, and neither of those two sides escape the relegation zone. I just think it's too tough to call that one. So I think Burnley versus West Ham finishes a draw. Fulham versus Everton, I would suggest that Fulham will win that game, although that's a bit of a coin toss for me, for my mind. Man United versus Spurs. Man United seem to be going well under Michael Carrick, don't they?
So just I think say it, Seamus. Well, Manchester United's going to win, aren't they?
They are going to win that game. They're up to fourth. They're in good form. They should finish in one of the Champions League places this year. So I'm picking Man United to beat Spurs in that game.
Absolutely. Then we move on to the other 3-4 a.m. games: Arsenal versus Sunderland, Wolverhampton Wanderers versus Chelsea, AFC Bournemouth versus Aston Villa.
Look, for me, these three games are pretty simple to call in my mind. I go with the teams that are all in the Champions League conversation. Arsenal are going to win the title. They'll be too strong for Sunderland. Chelsea will defeat Wolves, who are going to be relegated before the season has ended. And Aston Villa are still going to be the wild card in the chasing pack, and they will beat Bournemouth away from home.
Do you know when you said Arsenal are going to win the title, I have probably going to get abuse from Arsenal fans because the way we've picked EPL games, they're probably thinking, don't let them two pick a raffle.
it's reverse psychology, right? Because, I'm hoping by putting this external pressure on Arsenal from little down here in little old New Zealand that maybe they trip up and fall. It's the same strategy I'm trying to employ for Man United, that's saying that they're definitely going to be in the Champions League place. Hopefully those two things don't happen. So look, I don't know whether my influence stretches that far, but that's what I'm telling myself to keep myself sleeping at night, that's for sure.
Okay, then we got to 6:30 a.m. Newcastle versus Brentford, Monday 3 a.m. Brighton versus Crystal Palace, and at the end, and I never thought I'd say, I really hope Liverpool beat Manchester City, or else just have a nil or draw. So the first game, Newcastle versus Brentford.
That finishes the draw for me. I really like Brentford. I really like what they're doing. I really like the fact that they're defying the odds. They're still up in the top 10, sitting in seventh place at the moment. I think that game against Newcastle finishes a draw. I'd love to see Brentford win that and really get into the conversation around Europe and European places, but I can't separate those two sides. Brighton versus Palace again, I think that's also a draw. You know, Brighton are doing exactly what Brentford are doing. They've established themselves as a real mainstay of the Premier League in the last few seasons. So I think that one is a draw. And I'm going to be boring again and predict that there's a draw at Anfield between Liverpool and Manchester City. You know, Liverpool had that streak of unbeaten matches, but a lot of them were draws. And I think this one finishes a stalemate at Anfield.
Absolutely. Well, Seamus, thank you for making yourself available. We will catch up next week. And looking forward to, and hopefully at some point, are you calling the game today?
No, I'm not. I'm not on the Auckland FC match, but I've got the call up again to do the Wellington Phoenix Women versus Central Coast next week, and then I'm back on the A-League, I think, again a little bit later on the season. So I'll be on the couch down here in Hamilton and doing Auckland FC versus Sydney. That game should be an absolute cracker. But don't, if you're sitting in Auckland, don't be like me and watch it on the couch. Get out and get to go to Media Stadium. Game day is a really exciting proposition, and I think from an Auckland FC perspective, they'd love to have the port bouncing and the 12th man in the stand, so to speak, to really cheer that side home in a really difficult match against Sydney FC.
Brilliant stuff, Seamus. Have a great weekend, mate.
You too. Cheers.
Seamus Martin from Between Two Bears. Let's play a bit of music, and then I've done a pre-record, and then we do our preview on Super Bowl with Darren Lees.
All of my seat's been taken by some sunglasses, asking about a scar, and I know I gave it to you months ago. I know you're trying to forget, but between the drinks and subtle things, the holes in my apologies, you know, I'm trying hard to take.
Okay, we're back. So yesterday evening, I was able to do a quick preview of Super Bowl with our very own Darren Lees from Third and Footlong, and I'll just get to that recording right now.
Whoa, here we go, Super Bowl time, and here to join us is our expert on American football. Wow, you gotta love that bit of Funky James Brown, Darren Lee from Third and Footlong and Podcast, which is a show on American football and American culture, and it's always, and he's especially done this interview for me, Darren. I would have to say it's good evening from here. I believe where you are, it's good morning.
Yes, indeed, it is 8 o'clock in the morning here in France.
Yeah, wow, I must admit. And of course, you know, I couldn't really imagine the French being excited about Super Bowl. But I can tell you something right now: Super Bowl, it has one of the biggest TV audiences in the world. You know, I look at how American football has grown in Super Bowl itself. Like, I can remember as a young kid, they'd have one or two bars which would be either, and especially when you're in Christchurch, would be based at where the American base was at Christchurch Airport. But now you look around, it's not only the fans in New Zealand and across the world, but it's, you know, people enjoy it. It's an event, you know, and a lot of bars, a lot of workmen's clubs, they're going to be packed because it has built this. So, hey, it's a big one, Darren. Your thoughts on this Super Bowl?
Yeah, as you say, I mean, it's huge. And NFL is growing, the amount of NFL, Australia, New Zealand Facebook pages. Whenever they play international games around the world, they sell out everywhere. They're now playing about four or five games a year in the UK. They're now playing in Mexico. They're playing in Munich. And next year, they're actually playing a full-season NFL game in Australia.
Oh, mate.
So that's just been announced this week, which the teams are going to be. It's a massive game that they've chosen for Australia. It's going to be the Rams, who obviously came very close to getting in the Super Bowl, and the San Francisco 49ers.
Wow.
So we don't have the date yet, but we know. And that's a division game as well, so they both play in the NFC West, so it's going to have a lot of spice to it. So it's an amazing first game for us to experience down here in the Southern Hemisphere.
And this is huge because, you know, like, when we look at it, like, I know that you'll be going, I know there'll be so many interests in sports fans from New Zealand will be going across the ditch, and I must admit, at some point, you know, we hope we can get an exhibition game at Eden Park. I know this seems pretty, it seems pretty pipe dream, but no, this is the amazement. But hey, Darren, this Super Bowl game, well, I'm looking forward to it because there's so many key players and there's so many key decisions. Looking at the Seattle Seahawks, who are the key players there for you?
Well, the real key player that everyone's going to be watching for Seattle is Sam Darnold, the quarterback.
Mm.
So last year, when Darnold was with the Vikings, they had this amazing season, and then the last one or two preseason games, he fell apart. They got into the playoffs. He was seeing ghosts, and everything was going wrong. And they got ditched out of the playoff contention pretty early when they were heavy favourites to go to the Super Bowl. Of course, that then made the decision that the Vikings had to decide whether they were going to pay him or not. They decided not to. They let him go. He went to Seattle. Seattle then went and had this amazing season on the back of Sam Darnold. And then they're like, ah, oh, yeah, but what are we going to get in the postseason here with Sam Darnold? And then all of a sudden, you know, he's carried on being that player again in the playoffs. And everyone keeps going, yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but. And he's got them within one game now. So if he wins this Super Bowl, he's going to put to bed all of that. Sam Darnold can't do it. He's the great regular season guy. So without doubt, everyone's watching him. And then another key player, there's probably two more from the offensive side. That's Kenneth Walker, the running back.
Yep.
So Seattle has had such a potent running game all season, but then when Charbonnet got injured, they haven't quite been the same running team because they had this 1-2 punch where they would put in Charbonnet and Walker. Charbonnet got some good pace and stuff like that, but Charbonnet's done for the season.
Mm.
So now they're one-dimensional because they've just got the one running back. And then Jackson Smith and Jigba, the wide receiver.
Yeah, there's a lot of big, talk about him. Yeah.
Yeah, well, he won Offensive Player of the Year last night at the NFL Honors. So, you know, he's had an amazing season as wide receiver. And then also in Seattle was Cooper Kupp, who's the other wide receiver, who was cut by the Rams after winning a Super Bowl with the Rams and was the MVP of that Super Bowl when they beat Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals. And now he's back at the big dance with Seattle. It almost seems like there's a few off-casts that have just kind of like they've landed in Seattle and they've kind of put it together, a bit like what Indiana did in the college game. Mm. They kind of had all these players that were kind of let go from different places, and Mike McDonald's brought them together and has turned them into a team that there's got some beating on Sunday night America, Monday New Zealand time.
Oh yeah, and looking at it, of course, their opposition, the New England Patriots. I'm going to put a New Zealand rugby spin on them. Now, unfortunately, I'm from Christchurch, as you probably are aware, but the Patriots are the Crusaders of it's basically what the Crusaders are to New Zealand rugby. They're always going to be always there, and everyone hates them.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, in my opinion, I think they're incredibly lucky to be in the Super Bowl for a couple of reasons. Number one, they had probably the fifth easiest schedule in the history of the NFL. But as we say in sport, you can only beat the opposition that's in front of you. And quite a lot of the time, they've been doing that very well. Playoff Patriots, a little bit different to the regular season Patriots, but we can talk about Drake May in a minute and what's going on there. Yes, of course, since the late 90s, the Patriots became the dynasty with Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, won six Super Bowls, probably went to 10, have won. They were always the team that if you led with a minute or two to go, never give them the ball back, because if you did, they had this way of just pulling the Phoenix from the Flames. They did it against Atlanta, they did it against Carolina, they did it against Seattle. So this is actually a repeat of the 2015 Super Bowl 49, which had that hugely controversial ending to it when Seattle were driving, there were seconds left on the clock. Mm. They had probably arguably the greatest running back in the NFL at that point, Marshawn Lynch. They were on the 1 yard line. Everybody thought they were going to put it in Lynch's hands. They decided to throw it and New England intercepted it, and the rest is history. It's like the ending that everyone was like, why, what the hell just happened? But you're right. The Patriots, they've been in the wilderness for a couple of years. Yeah. Brady left. They really struggled to find a replacement. Belichick really didn't draft well. They made the decision to part with Belichick. Brady went up to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, won another Super Bowl with them. And they bought Mike Vrabel in last year. And, you know, the ex-Tennessee Titans coach, you know, maybe he'd run his course at Tennessee. They let him go. And he's just come in here and he's completely transformed this team.
Oh, wow. And you do look at the key players. And obviously, the one we're all talking about is Drake May.
Yeah, well, Drake May obviously was in the final two for the overall NFL MVP. He lost out to Matthew Stafford, and there's probably a couple of reasons for that. It is meant to be judged on the regular season, and when you look at the postseason, Stafford has been more consistent. Stafford's also about 38, so whether they were looking at him going, really, if it's not this year for Stafford, it's kind of how they look at it as a Hall of Fame as well. If someone's got one more chance to go in, as we've seen this year, you had Belichick up for the Hall of Fame and he didn't get in, and you're like, is six Super Bowls not enough for you guys or what? But there were a couple of people that were in last chance and they've got in, and maybe that's what's gone into the reckoning. But what we've seen with Drake May, Eamon, is in the regular season, probably the most accurate quarterback, second year in the NFL, and remarkable stuff. But postseason Drake May, he has really struggled. I mean, against Denver in the last game, he didn't even throw for 100 yards. And I know a lot of people are going, yeah, but look at the conditions. It was like, hang on, it wasn't snowing for nearly three quarters, and he only threw for 86 yards. And everyone knew going up against that Denver defense, he was going to struggle, but he really struggled in the last game. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting. The two quarterbacks, and of course, Drake May, rumoured to be carrying a throwing shoulder injury.
Sam Darnold was
carrying an oblique injury, so it's going to be interesting to see how these two quarterbacks come out and whether they start throwing bombs right from the start.
Well, that's what it is. And of course, when I look at it, of course, then we've got the halftime show. Now, Bad Bunny. Now, I know he's famous with the young people, and I'm not one of the young people. Bad Bunny sounds like a rabbit on myxomatosis, Darren.
Yeah, one of the most popular artists in the world. Again, like you, I don't know a lot of his music, and of course there's been a lot of contention with his Latino sort of background, and of course all of the political stuff going on in America at the moment. Mm. He's quite vocal about that, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. But hugely popular, because the NFL is massively popular in South America, and Bad Bunny has a huge following down there. So it's a very interesting choice for main market America. But yeah, the NFL, as you can see by the international games all around the world, I mean, when you look at American sports in general, baseball's always been the apple pie sport of America. Then when you add Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, you know, Larry Bird, all of those people, the NBA became huge, but the NFL have really found a way to globalise their business, and they're now pretty much the biggest sport in the world, and by choosing Bad Bunny, I think that's just another way. You know, you would have Prince, and you would have Coldplay, and you'd have Beyonce, and then a few years ago, they had Eminem and Dr. Dre, and last year, they had Kendrick Lamar. So you could see they're really trying to diversify their market on what they're trying to aim at.
Absolutely. I suppose Bad Bunny compared to Dave Dobbin playing halftime at a Super Rugby game is a big difference.
Just a little bit. It'd be great to see Dave Dobbin doing the halftime. Every other 100,000 Americans going, who is this guy?
No, but
who is this guy? Loyal?
Oh, and if you see the law now in America, and we'll get off that, because we said there's something else, but we'll say nothing else. looking at this, who are you picking in this, Darren? My head said Seattle and my heart said Seattle, but as we just said, the New England Patriots, if anyone can do it, it's those guys.
100%. And with a Super Bowl, it's a one-off, right? This season, the Seattle defense have been tagged as the number one or two defense with Houston. Last game against the Rams, and I know it's the Rams, Matthew Stafford, MVP, Puka Nacua, all those guys, but they got torched. They got torched for nearly 500 yards, but then they were able to answer back. The Patriots have really struggled. They beat the Texans with a very bad CJ Stroud. They beat Denver without their number one quarterback, Bo Nix. And of course, on this show 2 weeks ago, we predicted a Seattle-New England final. So here we are at the Super Bowl. Personally, I have Seattle by about 7 points. Yep. I just think they're probably going to have too much for New England. The New England defense has been getting better and getting better, and it's now elite. Seattle's defense has been elite. It's really going to come down to Drake May versus Sam Darnold. Which of those quarterbacks is going to come out hot? Can May pick up his game after what's been a disappointing postseason for him? The New England run game versus the Seattle run game, as I said, that Seattle running back situation. And then two pretty powerful defenses, what can they shut down? But I probably have Seattle maybe, it's difficult, sort of 21-14, 28-21. I don't think it's going to be fireworks at 35-32 or anything like that. I do think, the over-under on this game is probably about 45 points because it's going to be two tough defenses going up against each other.
Absolutely. Well, Darren, I hope that you find somewhere that you can watch the game. Obviously, if it's on TV in France, or obviously you'll have the laptop fired up to Chromecast it, so you can watch. And I hope you enjoy it. And as always, it's always a pleasure having you on the show, even though you've only been on twice. So, but we'll leave it there. We're going to lead out with the Godfather of Soul. Come on, Darren, get dancing, man. Come on, you're moving, mate.
I'm moving, mate.
There we go, we'll put it down, the old Godfather. Hey, have a great day. All the best, Darren. That is, once again, thank you very much, and we will catch up very soon.
And that was Darren Lee from Third and Foot Long. That was a great preview of the Super Bowl. Next up, we have the panel with the Silver Tongue Silver Fox, Sean Summerfield, and hopefully Lee Piper on the other side.
Far away, far away.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend here on Planet FM. It's time for the panel. On line one, for the first time this year in 2026, the old Silver Tongue, Silver Fox, Sean Summerfield. Welcome back, mate.
G'day, mate. How are you? Happy New Year, bro.
And then on line two, after being in Queenstown watching the Highlanders pre-season, where he watched the game intensely while probably eating the finest food and drinking the finest wine, the mouth of the South, Lee Piper. Hello, Lee Piper.
I'm coming to you live from Omakau today. I ended up, contrary to what you just outlined there, I did the game on YouTube and Highlanders TV yesterday. So
you were actually doing some work for a change.
I wouldn't say work. I didn't remember getting too much money for it, and a bit like your show. it's always surprising. You go and have a wee bit look later, and they ended up with sort of like 24,000 people on the view. So, yeah.
Oh, my God.
It was good. That was entertaining day and a nice day in Queenstown. So, just heading home and thought, I better stop at Omakau where they have some reception, or you'll give me a strum up.
I'd never do that. I'll give you a little bit of abuse. Anyway, guys, let's have a look at what's happened this week. And, of course, the All Blacks coaching. It's becoming embarrassing. It's becoming a bit of a debacle, guys. Steve Hansen's been asked to apply. Ian Foster was asked to apply. I don't know whether Milton Hague's been asked to apply. He's got international experience. But to me, Sean, I don't know where we're going with this. They've got to make a decision sooner or later, because there's a lot in play.
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously applications have closed. They've got the appointment panel there. The whole thing seems crazy. The whole sort of this Foster Hansen thing that sort of came out. Man, oh man, look, hey, they could probably go in as sort of in a godfather sort of role. I mean, say Foster is a tech and Hansen is a director of rugby, but look, clearly it's Joseph and Rennie, isn't it? It's a two-horse race, and Joseph seems great. I love the fact that Tony Brown, though, has said, no, mate, I'm staying loyal to Africa, which sums him up. But he also said, mate, I was available earlier. But this seems just messy, because whoever gets in there, saying, what, mid-March, hopefully, you've sort of got 3 months before the All Blacks are on the field, which seems a crazy time, because but by that stage, you should already be, you know, watching the Super Rugby and assessing who's what and who's who in the zoo and everything like that. But, yeah, I mean, I think unprofessional stuff happens a lot, but we don't see it. This is, everyone's getting to see this one, and it's not a good look for what's supposed to be the rugby leading union of the world.
Absolutely, and Lee, you know, we've been on the story for the last two or three weeks, but, you know, at some point they've got to do it, because there is a lot in play. There is a lot. Let's say if Jamie Joseph does get announced mid-season for the Highlanders, does he stay on as the coach? Or if he leaves, who comes in? You know, there's so much at play. You know, they've really got to get this sorted sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think he will get appointed. I don't think he'll take too many with him from the Highlanders, because I think that was... I just think the word I heard yesterday or doing the rounds was that Foster will be involved, that Joseph will be the head coach. But to Sean's point there, it's likely in a director of rugby type role, but Foster has indicated a willingness to be involved. That's the rumour, but as you all know, there's lots of rumours going around, but that would kind of make sense to me. And Foster would be the sort of guy, I think, that would fit that mould for 18 months to the end of next year or 2027, see you through a Rugby World Cup, and then if things went amazingly to plan, then, yeah, you do bring in Tony Brown potentially at that point as well. But, yeah, I think the strong rumour is that it's going to be Jamie Joseph. The Highlanders, I think they're going to need some help from New Zealand Rugby to kind of sort that out and where they go and who they have there. It's really whether Jamie decides to take like a David Kidwell as a defensive coach. He could also go back to a couple of stalwarts, and one of them could be Scott McLeod, because he was part of the Highlander setup with Jamie Joseph. He had success, I think, when Jamie went over to coach Japan. He led the Highlanders to that victory over the British in British Isles. And then he was obviously part of Ian Foster's setup and pretty successful as well. And then obviously he got moved aside when Scott Robertson came in. So that's starting to feel like it's got some traction. You might see him come in. It'll be interesting also, the guy that this name's barely been bandied around that I think would be someone that Jamie Jobe again might chase is someone like Kenny Lim, who's done such a great job, part of the Islanders set up a couple of years ago and then got picked up by Argentina. And we've seen the emergence of Argentina on the international stage and where they've gone from. And he's a good New Zealand lad, so he might be a possibility as well. But I think to your point, it's got to get sorted and sorted quickly. Applications have closed. It's really whether they see a role for Rennie and Joseph to work together. But I think it's more likely that it's to be a Jamie Joseph, Ian Foster type combination. They've worked together in the past. They like each other. They've got good respect for each other. And I think that's probably where you'll end up.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I haven't chatted here this year, but, you know, we talked, and I don't want to sound like I knew anything was going on way back, but, you know, the talk before even Robertson had the role was that he was maybe a coach's coach and not a player's coach. It was clear the union didn't want to do something so drastic, but they had to because he'd lost that dressing room a long time ago. And, you know, so I think a lot of people, anyone that sort of thing, oh, why are the union doing this? I don't think they had a choice.
Well, an interesting article again in the New Zealand Herald today, basically Shane Curry writing the background to it. And I think what was interesting is that when he's gone into the role, and you can see this now when you reflect back, you know, the Crusaders didn't recognise him. You know, who was the guy that was fun and energetic and so on top of his game and the Crusaders set up that obviously led them to success, comes into the All Blacks completely different. And you could see it early on. He looked like a man under pressure. He looked like a guy looking at short-term solutions. And the best example of this was that game against Italy at the end of the 24 season. He had a whole lot of young guys he'd taken on tour. We lost to France very narrowly the week before. It was a golden opportunity to give these guys a run, and he didn't. And he put in, because he, according to him, he wanted to finish the season on a high. Well, it ended up being the opposite. I think we won 24-12. It was a very, very average and tired All Black performance. And I thought at that point, this guy is coaching week to week, not really with a look ahead. And then obviously it's just got, you know, it's got worse. As it's gone on, and to Sean's point, I think it just got to the point where that he not only lost the dressing room, he lost those closest to him, which was his Crusader supporters, if you like. You know, lots of rumours of Crusaders blues, but I think they ended up on the same song sheet, you know, in the end. So, you know, definitely a change, but I think we have to get on with it now. And we've got to move pretty quickly.
Absolutely. Just while we say, if Jamie Joseph hypothetically gets the job, which I think he's favourite too, the Highlanders, which I know is a passion for you, Lee. I'm purely speculating here, Lee and Sean, but nothing would surprise me if they were to bring a former All Black coach, Steve Hansen, into their Highlanders setup. Maybe not as a coach, but maybe as a director of coaching.
Born Steve Hansen. There you go.
Yeah. I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's going to put them under pressure because effectively in the last month they've lost their star player in Dylan Pledger, who, you know, we saw the massive impact that he had in Otago. They didn't take him away on that All Black 15 tour because they were trying. He'd had a lot of rugby. Remember, he was the captain of the New Zealand 20s and just, you know, one of the standout players in that tournament. And he played a full NPC season, and right, get yourself right for NPC, and then bang, he's out with a season injury. And then obviously the news overnight, where I was yesterday, that Fabian Holland's going to be out, potentially probably for the first month of the competition, with a shoulder injury, nothing too serious. Well, when I say nothing too serious, looks like he's dislocated it. Put it back in last night, haven't heard any reports this morning. But again, so your two best players, and then suddenly your coach is gone, and you look like, holy heck, and it's a franchise that, you know, we all thought this year was starting, you know, slowly starting to come right. But, you know, on the performance I saw yesterday, they're a long way from where they would need to be. Caleb Tungatau was good. Nipkins was good at the, you know, at the back. Talia was good. Fakitaba was good. So they've got TK Howden. So they've got those players coming. but they need all of their stars on, and you lose your coach and your two best players for the first month of the competition, you're really going to start behind the eight ball, aren't you?
Yeah, well, and this is the reason. I don't think it's outside the realms of possibility, like a Steve Hansen being involved with the Highlanders. In fact, I think it may be a good fix for the Highlanders, but that's purely my opinion.
Is it pure speculation, or is there any rumour?
It's pure speculation at this stage.
Well, I think we'll leave it in the pure speculation. I haven't heard that one at all. That would be something New Zealand rugby could do. But, yes, it would be a great thing. I think, to Sean's point, Miles Gilborn, guy coming back, helping out for a season would be good. But at the moment, he's up in Japan. So how that fits in, I wouldn't know. Maybe, to your point, you know, they kick Jamie Joe long enough for Hansen to come out of contract and come back. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's what it is. Anyway, I've just been looking during the week. This guy, Sam Roof, what a athlete, Lee. What an absolute athlete. A bit reminds me a bit of myself, and maybe doesn't remind me of yourself. But I don't think that, you know, I think this kid's only 16. You know, probably hasn't got his driver's license. But, you know, you have a look at it. This kid's a freak.
Well, you could be described as a freak as well, so that's about, that's about the only parallel you can draw between him and you in terms of athletic ability. But, yeah, look, I tell you what, we you know, particularly for myself and Sean, when we grew up, you know, when we were kids in the Walker, Dick Quacks, Rob Dixon era, you know, I was probably a little bit young for the Peter Snells and Murray Helberg. But
Are you sure? What about the Jack Lovelock era?
Easy.
Yeah, no, thanks for that,
pal. Eamon, I watched you run at the school athletics, so mind yourself.
Yeah, I was, yes, wasn't exactly a bad athlete. Sean can actually...
It was untidy but fast, over 50 metres.
Yeah, well, Piper might have other things when he sees me socially, what I'm like.
Yeah, he's quite quick getting to and from Father Ted, so I noticed a wee bit of pace there. But anyway, back to my point, we've got a long history with middle distance running, and it was something that we, you know, excelled at, and probably Nick Willis came along but wasn't quite in the same league. But this kid here, that's phenomenal, albeit indoor. And I heard Mark Watson on radio the other day, and he obviously is someone that's, you know, got a good knowledge of it. And he said, you know, when, you know, people say, oh, it's indoors. He said, often it's harder indoors than outdoors because you don't have the elements to you know, on that. But he just couldn't speak highly enough of it. So, yes, he's a superstar. At 16, I think, you know, this year, you've got to take him to the Comm Games, don't you? Like, it's not like the Olympics. It's not. He's not going to get out of his league, and he could, you know, it's another international meet. But, yeah, no, that's been brilliant and, you know, awesome for him to get the coverage he has, and excited about what he could do.
Sure.
Yeah, hey, I will say, though, you know, it was really, really cool, this kid. In January, he stepped in to guide a visually impaired 12-year-old to a personal best at the Colgate Games.
That's brilliant. That's a good guy.
This sums him up as a young man. And what I loved, his coach said he's only doing about 70 Ks a week. He's not doing the 130 Ks, which the top milers are doing. So they're looking after him, because I'm starting to straight away think of, and let's be honest, Nick Willis podiumed twice at the Olympics. He was pretty awesome, but I keep thinking of Jack O'Gill, who was this, you know, obviously, yes, young freak at the time, but he overtrained and overdid it. There was so much hype, and I thought, oh, please don't have this happen, but it seems like they're doing this the right way with Sam, and it's quite phenomenal. He's within 1.2 seconds of Snell's 1,000-meter record. You know, he's broken John Walker's mile. He is, they're saying, once in a generation. I think he's on track to be the greatest, but people like me, like all of us, have just got to calm down and let the people that know look after him, because, when Rod Dixon compares his maturity and rhythm to Edmund Hillary, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And his attitude to Walker's, it's phenomenal, but let's let the people that know look after him, because I think we have absolute solid gold here.
I think what you said is a great point, sorry, Sean, around... But when you're 16, you don't need to overtrain, because you're just naturally, you know, you're naturally fit, aren't you? It's when you start chasing girls and drinking beer that things go downhill rapidly. But I think for him, yes.
Speak for yourself.
If he's doing 70K a week, you don't need to overtrain. You're naturally quick, because you're naturally at 16, you've just got that natural fitness. So, you know, really great to hear him, and it's such a good example around Jacko, Jack O'Gill, and really his career never reached any really great heights. from someone who we thought would be, you know, phenomenal. So, yeah, really great point.
Absolutely. Hey, Sean, just quickly, motorsport. Now, Liam Lawson's been testing out the racing balls. What are you hearing, mate?
Oh, look, he wasn't the quickest, wasn't the slowest. Ferrari, Mercedes and McLaren set the pace. They were sort of focused on reliability. He's got the new power unit that Red Bull are working on with Ford. He did 132 laps. They said they weren't focused on outright pace. He's, remember, we're a whole different car this year. So it's a lot more nimble. There's more electric power. There's different aerodynamics. There's a whole lot of stuff going on. The car's lighter. They've got this cool thing, guys. There's no DRS now. They've got downforce for the corners and the straights. And then they've got, so it's basically active. They've lost a lot of the ground effects, which suck the car to the road so that it doesn't porpoise. And then they've got this power boost button that gives them half of a millijoule, which I've checked. They get it for about, it lasts about 1.5 seconds or something, but that basically is enough to let them slingshot past another car. But I've checked, these cars recoup enough power in 3 laps to run a house for a day. I think that's phenomenal. I've just been geeking out on this. I think Liam, if he takes the senior role with the team this year, and his head's in the right place, but again, you know, it's a year-by-year contract. And but if he stays ahead of Lindblad, you know, he'd be looking good. I think the pick is he's regular, you know, 7th to 10th place, so he's in the points, and he can build himself a really, really good year.
Absolutely. And, of course, then, come Monday, are we all looking forward to Super Bowl, Lee? Now, Super Bowl isn't a flash haircut from your part of the world, by the way.
I actually am. I ended up in Seattle in 2015, I think it might have been, after they won it last time. And, it's a great place to go, Seattle. We've told... we went up to Vancouver. We went through Seattle on the train and spent a few nights here. Great place. I think they're favourites to win this. They've been the form team and the competition and Super Bowl in itself is the magnificent occasion. And you talk to a lot of the younger guys and they're, you know, kind of 20s and early 30s. They're all taking the day off tomorrow. I'm looking forward to it. I think Seahawks get the job done well. But Patriots have got a good history. It's actually been a really great finals series, the way that it's kind of, you know, panned out. And, I loved it. So I'm looking forward to tomorrow.
You know what?
I think you're right. I mean, like, I worked in a summer camp in Washington State, so I can, that's any link I've got to Seattle there, but they seem to be the favourites. I think what they say, the thing to look out for, that Stephon Diggs, that wide receiver from the Pats, is probably going to propose to Cardi B after the game. So that could be the only celebration for the Patriots. But and then you've got this whole story from 10 years ago where, you know, Seattle threw that intercept. They could have won and beaten the Patriots and didn't. So there's a lovely story there, and a redemption arc, if you like. And, it's all looking good for them. So what's your pick? I reckon, say, what, 31-20?
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, the halftime show, now, maybe I'm a bit out of touch, which you both probably could agree, but Bad Bunny's doing the halftime show. Now, I asked someone, what's bad about him? Is he a rabbit on myxomatosis or something?
No, it's a dead bunny.
No. I'd never heard of the bloke, but what makes me laugh with guys like Bad Rabbit is he spent a lot of commentary in the last few weeks saying how much he hates America and America's terrible, and then he's going to the most patriotic event in America to sing. I'm like, well, if you hate the country that much, why are you turning up? But, yeah, no, I don't think I'll be sticking around for the halftime. What's interesting in this is a bit of a sidebar, just quite quickly before we finish up, is the amount of interest that New Zealand has in a sport of which we have no affiliation at all. And I think it's still, on some level, it goes to show that we just, A, we love sport, but B, it's not that complicated, American football. Sure, they've got a bit more of the, you know, the VAR now, and you can the coaches can chuck in the flag and challenge, etc. But it's pretty pure. You know, you get the ball, you get 10 meters, you got to get 10 yards. You get 4 shots. If you can't, you punt it downhill, down the other end, away you go. Very simple game, and I think we like starting to like this, and it starts to drift into our young people because rugby continues to be so complicated. And I'll just say this, that they operated yesterday in the game in Queenstown between Moana Pacifica and the Highlanders under the new rules. It made a hell of a difference. It was so much quicker. Referee didn't really... We had one yellow card towards the end for an intentional holding the player on the ground. That was about it. There was only about 8 or 9 penalties in the game. Lots of, you know, free kicks. Game was sped up. Not really. It looked like quite a few forward passes that were just let go. So, yeah, it was good. And if they can continue that, and I think that'll be a great thing. But I think, to my point, you know, these other sports are starting to challenge because they're simply easier to watch and a bit better of a sporting occasion because they're not complicated for the, you know, for the average judge.
And the word you just said there, Lee, is occasion. This is the biggest show in sport. It's now $8 million US for a 30-second spot on the ads. I love the ads as much. Charlie Puth is doing the national anthem, which is really cool. He's awesome.
Hey, Sean, we're just heading out, so sorry to cut you out. We've got to go because we're off. Okay?
Right.